Jerry Hendricks of the Center for a New American Security, Michael Vlahos of Johns Hopkins University, and recently of the U.S. Naval War College here. The Pentagon releases the National Military Strategy as General Martin Dempsey's last big task as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Jerry, I'll start with you. This is the fourth or fifth major document release, strategic document release during the Obama administration. What makes this one different than the others, and why should we pay attention to what's included here? Thanks for your time.
Well, I think the thing that's different about this one is we have the first major document that is specifically calling out China, Russia, and aspects of the Middle East as threats to the United States. We have always gone out of our way, especially over the last 6 years of the Obama administration, to be careful in not specifically calling out these nations as competitors or being aggressive in their actions. And in fact, this one does explicitly state that they are acting in an aggressive manner against international norms. The other aspect of this, too, is that this document calls out or attempts to clarify the complexity of modern war, its investigation or its exploration of hybrid warfare, this idea that it is all not high-end warfare of divisional fights, but in fact that the low-end or the use of irregular forces is going to be an ongoing and persistent aspect of war going into the future, and that we need to train and equip ourselves against that. The difficulty with this document is that, one, it's coming at the end of General Dempsey's time as chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and so the timing of it coming out essentially handcuffs, perhaps, General Dunford, the new incoming chairman, with the strategy of his predecessor. I would like to see these documents come much earlier in the term of a chairman. If this is going to be the guidepost by which the chairman steers himself through the time, this should really be done within the first 6 to 9 months of a chairman's tour. The other aspect of this is that it doesn't specifically address the resources that are required to execute this strategy. And that's been an area that we have been noticeably negligent in recent years in saying that here's all the problems and this is what I need to address those problems. This does not call out beyond just a rough talking over of new technologies that are emerging to actually get into some hard numbers on what would be required to execute this strategy.
Michael, I found the emphasis on irregular warfare in this rather ironic, considering we're learning about new problems with the F-35, the most expensive weapon system in history, the future of the littoral combat ship and what we'll call it and how it will deploy and its survivability and so on. Also a very expensive program. All of those questions exist about the LCS. And essentially, my takeaway from this was that General Dempsey saying we may find ourselves in cases where those weapons don't do us much good anyway.
Yeah, I keep hoping that Gilbert and Sullivan will come back and write one final tune here, because the problem with the U.S. is it's constantly declaring well after the fact that it needs to find a good a strategy for the kind of war that it doesn't know how to name. And it's sounding a little old at this point, since we failed miserably at something the French had a perfectly good name for in the 17th century. It was called Petite Guerre. And petite guerre has always gone hand in hand with whatever you want to call big war, war of battles. And we can't deal with the fact that there's petite guerre, even though we fight them all the time and have been doing so since we were the insurgents in 1775 and 76. So the problem here, and the only reason to read any release of the National Military Strategy, is to see whether or not the Pentagon has made any progress in understanding what strategy is and show any recognition that they know what strategy is. If they had called this National Threat Assessment, that would be good, but it's not even a threat assessment. It is a checklist, and a checklist that has not been checked except that, oh, check all boxes. Yes, we're ready to fight Iran. We're ready to fight North Korea. We're fighting in the Middle East. Oh, Russia too. We're almost at war there. And of course, there's the South China Sea. That's just a list of people we can fight. It doesn't even tell you what the order or severity or potential consequences would be. and is about as far from an actual strategy as you could imagine. So I find this document more of a useful benchmark on the limitations in American military and strategic thinking today.
Michael Vlahos, recently of the Naval War College and now of Johns Hopkins University, and Dr. Jerry Hendricks, the Center for New American Security. This report in Defense News, Jerry, says the strategy also hits on the concerns highlighted by Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter and Deputy Secretary Bob Work over the last 6 months, that the U.S. is no longer guaranteed technological superiority. They've spoken a lot about that. Frank Kendall has spoken a lot about that as the Undersecretary of Defense for ATL. Do we think about the technology too much, do you think? Do we think about having great stuff as opposed to what Michael's talked about the concept of small war, which has traditionally been fought with the same things over the last 200, 300, 400 years?
In some ways, I think that the United States has placed a greater emphasis on technology as the solution, that we take a sort of an engineering systems of systems approach to how we're going to solve national security issues. Certainly, we need to have investments in new technology. It would do us no good to be still fighting with broadswords and bows and arrows. However, there has to be a balance. There has to be a balance between the exquisite sort of, you know, golden BB solution to warfare and the importance of quantity. You know, for instance, in my own area of naval presence, you know, if we had one battleship that had master lasers and the ability to do all wonderful things, but it could only be in one place, it's going to be relatively ineffective. We still need a naval fleet of about 350 ships to cover our naval presence requirements worldwide. The Joint Strike Fighter is a great example of this in that because of its cost and expense, we'll be able to buy fewer of them than the aircraft that they're replacing. What does that mean for us with regard to air presence on the worldwide? There has to be a balance between buying a smaller number of highly complex platforms and a larger number of less complex platforms so that we can maintain that presence requirement of being a great power in the world.
Michael, my first thought when I saw this was, as I mentioned, here's another one of these things. Do we have too many planning and strategy documents, and should they be more narrowly, or not narrowly focused, but should they be, should the effort be more focused to producing certain types of documents to give both the military and civilian leadership guidance as to what we're able to do and how we're able to do it?
Well, there's too much and too many of everything in the world of defense and national security. And there's really nothing to be done about that, unfortunately. Nothing practical, that is. I'm more concerned by the fact that these are, let's get everyone on message and in step, than actually trying to think through a problem, or even to let the American public, you know, the American citizenry know that the national defense is at least trying to think about these things. So it seems to me to be a very counterproductive document in that it shows a tremendously orthodox, reflexive, stratified orbit of thinking in national defense and an unwillingness to actually grapple with the kind of thinking that would allow us to effectively win the next war. The message it gives our enemies is that they are assured the first battle because they know exactly where the U.S. is and what it's up to and how it's going to fight. And this is not a comforting thought. We really look more and more like the American Army and Navy of the 1930s, and that worries me.